My name's David Bryford, and I'm a senior scientist at the Leibniz Supercomputing Center in Munich. And I'm also a member of the technical steering committee for the OpenHPC project. And today I'm talking about how to deploy containerized applications and workflows on large scale and secure HPC systems. So basically, what we're looking to do is to transition your workflows and your applications from your development environments, which for lots of applications it will be laptops and desktops, to a supercomputer with as minimal effort as possible. And it just needs to work. Obviously, this is going to become more and more important when we're looking at things like AI and other sort of new sort of non-traditional HPC applications. So the ability to actually create your workflows to be portable inside a container is really, really important. It's not necessarily just building your application and compiling your application, but actually your entire workflow, because generally that's what's important to you, not just at building your application and running it, because your workflows are getting significantly more complicated. So the ability to actually transition workflows from your development environment to supercomputers, because obviously a lot of scientists don't just want to run it on a single supercomputer, they want to run it on different sensors. And they also want to be able to do this like with as little effort as possible, and also to make it as portable as possible. Unfortunately, containers themselves are not portable, and we'll explain this in the next section. So obviously, some of the key challenges you're actually going to see when you're running for HPC systems are you're going to have different instruction set architectures, which also known as ISAs. So you've got the CPU, so you have the x86 family, then you have the ARM family, then you have the power family, then you have various different GPUs from NVIDIA and AMD, and also Intel in the future. And also you're going to have accelerators on sort of novel and systems. Also, you're going to have different memory interconnects and nodes configurations. Those are also going to be important to you, because if you change them, you might actually have to change your workflows and what's actually installed in terms of drivers. Also, one of the big concerns which we have at LRZ is that we don't have a direct connection to the internet. So building stuff on our HPC system is not possible if you're connecting to the internet. So if you're using stuff like Python, Julia, or you're pulling down applications or software from the internet, that's not actually possible. And finally, things like system software, file systems, obviously driver hardware for GPUs, distributed processing software such as MPI, those also need to be specific for your particular HPC system. So your container will have to be modified to just that one. And also I/O patterns, because the parallel I/O file systems have specific I/O patterns, which they run really well. And when you sort of move away from them, they can actually cause significant problems to the system. So key challenges for the actual user is if you're looking at sort of the AI, ML, DL, workflows like such as TensorFlow, you've got a rapid update cycle. So basically, you're constantly building stuff. So if you can do it in a container, then this actually helps. Also, dependencies: are you running Python 3, Python 2, different versions of glibc, different versions of compilers, different versions of libraries, etc. Reproducibility. So this is what people talk about when they say, "Oh, containers are reproducible." Actually, they're not, because the HPC underlying HPC system changes, so your host system changes. So you might get a change to your parallel file system, such as GPFS. You might get a change to the OS in terms of adding patches. So the actual what you're actually running is not, even though the binaries inside the containers are the same, the actual binaries which you interface on the system are not, and that actually can actually mean that it's no longer reproducible in terms of your results. Also, we're looking at sort of performance and stability. You need to use optimized libraries and software which have been set up for that particular HPC system, especially when you're looking at things like MPI, because if you don't, then you can run it on a small number of nodes, but as soon as you scale to the hundreds of nodes and the thousands of MPI ranks, you're going to have a problem. And finally, which people don't realize, is the container size. If you're doing something like machine learning, you might have terabytes of data. Obviously, having a container of multiple terabytes of data, you're not going to be able to create that on your laptop. So you basically want to store your data in a different location in your container, because you need to actually move that container from your development environment to the HPC center. So the next thing is I want to talk about is OpenHPC. It's basically a open source HPC software stack, and it's under the Linux Foundation. There's the mission statement, and we also, the OpenHPC supports the container technologies such as Singularity and Charlie Cloud, which are used there. And we actually had a tutorial at SC20, and I'll actually provide links at the end of the presentation for that. So this is basically a simple workflow which we use to create containers on at LRZ. So basically, we create a Docker image, we modify it to make it HPC specific, we copy the instruction and execution scripts. So all these are sort of the first one, the actual number one, is we actually try to do that inside a Docker file now, rather than actually build a container. And the reason we do that is because that you've now actually got the recipe there in front of you, so you don't have to go back and say, what did I do 6 months ago or 12 months ago to create that container? Then what you want to do is, after you've actually created your Docker image, test it to make sure that it works, then convert your Docker image to the HPC container image of your choice. Again, test it to verify it works, then copy it to the HPC system. If it has a module system and it has the container technologies inside the module system, you load the module and then you execute it via Slurm. And for the system admins on the HPC system, a lot of times it will just look exactly like a traditional MPI job if you're running MPI software or MPI job. So this is basically the takeaways which we've sort of found out at LRZ to work really well. A lot of pain we actually decided and come across these things. So do all your conversion software and create a Docker file, because generally the HPC specific containers are not portable. I mean, you cannot translate from a Singularity to a Charlie Cloud or vice versa, or to Shifter or to any other HPC container technology. So you work, but they all support a transition from Docker. So if you start off with Docker, then you can move to the HPC container of your choice, or the container which the HPC system allows, because obviously LRZ said we do not allow Singularity for policy reasons. So when people come and say we have a Singularity container, we ask them, can you create a Charlie Cloud container? And it's a pain if they've just created a Singularity container and not from Docker, because it's a lot more work for them to do it. Obviously, you want to basically have everything in the Docker file, so you can actually change it for different architectures. Obviously, if you've written a container and you've got a binary for an x86, it's not going to run on an ARM system. But the Docker file, you can modify it and then rebuild it with the specific ARM or NVIDIA libraries. Also, test the container workflows at each stage if you built your container. So when you've built your Docker image and then also your specific HPC container, because it saves you a lot of work than moving it to the HPC center and then moving it. Do as much work on your local system or development VM as possible, because you can be root on your own system, but you're not going to be on the HPC system, and it just makes life a lot easier for you. So these are examples of what we've run on LRZ. So if we go to more background about this, is the reason we started to use containers was to get AI and specifically TensorFlow to run on the system. And this was an application which is from CERN, which is the 3D GAN model for detecting high energy particles from some of their colliders. And as you can see, if you look at the tables, you can see we've scaled up to, basically a single island on SuperMuckNG, which is 768 nodes. And each node contains 48 Xeon Skylake processors. And on the next one, you can see we've got the measured performance in petaflops on the small matrix multiplication application algorithm. So not in the full TensorFlow, but actually on the matrix multiplication, which we'd expect to be good. And we're actually getting good results from that side. If you look at the execution line, so it says chrun minus b, and this minus b allows you to bind the directories from the host system inside a equivalent directory inside the container. And the reason we do this is allow that the container to actually access and use software from the module system, and specifically MPI. And the only reason we got such good performance is we're actually using the system MPI at the runtime in the container rather than the standard mpitch. We actually only able to scale up to, I think it's 256 nodes, and the performance was like 4 times slower. And the scaling efficiency was bad, and also it wasn't as stable. It was crashing a lot. But when we were using the system MPI, which has been tuned for the HPC system, it worked very, very well. So this is another example. It was from a process project, an EU process project, and they wanted to run some containerized applications. So initially they created a container and they had MPI problems. And the reason was that they, inside the container, they hadn't set the libfabrics parameters. So they set that and then it got it working, but the performance was really poor because they were actually running the MPI over TCP. So to resolve that, we asked them to install the Omnipath software and then set it to take advantage of the high-speed interconnects. Because obviously the HPC centers have, you know, spent a lot of money on interconnects, and you wanted to use them as much as possible. The outcome was that all the issues and stability was no longer observed, and they were able to run their application on hundreds of nodes on the Skylake system and up to 8,000 MPI ranks. So another example we came across at LRZ was we had a set of researchers who wanted to test use fuzzing testing on the HPC system, and they caused all sorts of problems on the system. So basically when they tried to run it, they were bringing down the parallel file system because they were creating up to 6 million very, very small files in a very, very short amount of time. And it basically brought down the entire data center's infrastructure. So we said, okay, can we switch to a more high performance directory inside the HPC center file system by basically using the mount command so they could write to work instead of running it in home? It also still crashed. So what we looked at and said, found out is how big of files are you creating? They went, oh yeah, they're really, really small. And you're creating and destroying all these files. So actually, you can actually run them in RAM disk. So we basically mounted RAM disk inside the container to store these temporary files. And the outcome was that the application did no longer crash the HPC center. So that was good for everybody. And so that's the sort of things you need to be careful of. And when you're actually running these HPC systems. Another example we've been working on is the development with iCheck in Ireland, the HPC center in Ireland, on a quantum computing software package called Quantex. And what they were using is developing all their software in Julia. One of the initial things we found out was that Julia installs their packages in home/Julia, but however, the HPC containerized software we use, which is Charlie Cloud, the default is to map the user's home directory into the home directory in the container. So when you go to the home directory inside your container, you see that your home directory on the host. That caused a huge amount of problems because obviously the packages were no longer found and they was causing problems. So we actually went in and changed the environments, and you can also set the environment when you actually start the Charlie Cloud container. So when you saw the example chrun minus b, there's another parameter called set environment, and you can set it to a file, which is actually the file which the of the containing the environment settings, which is created when you created Docker. So the default behavior of Charlie Cloud is it takes the host environment, but we overcame that by using the setenv command and then set it to the file which with the Docker environment. We also wanted to actually profile the application using Liquid, and again we use the mounting option, the minus b, for the bind to the host system to get the modules, and we're actually able to profile the Julia applications with Liquid inside the system. So that's actually been a real use for us, and it's going to be also useful if you want to run, say, for example, profiling software, which is available on the HPC system, which either has a license associated with, which the HPC system has, or you don't, or it has software which you actually don't want to actually install in your container. So it allows you to actually create a smaller or a minimal container. So you don't need to actually install the software inside your container if it's available on the host system. So it actually, you know, reduces the size of your actual container. So the next part is we want to basically talk about, you know, how this has been used. So at Supercomputing 2020, we gave a virtual tutorial using the AWS cloud infrastructure. There's a link to the OpenHPC GitHub, and we have all the tutorials on there, including how to run containers. So if you want to just run the containerized section, or if you want to actually set up a open source HPC software stack inside the cloud, you can go through the entire tutorial. It would take you about 4 hours. The next link is to Charlie Cloud and how to use that. And this is the software we use at LRZ, because that's the policy. We also know that other HPC centers use Singularity, which is, I admit, is the most popular version for the HPC container software. But if your HPC system doesn't allow you to do that, you need to actually use a different one. So we try to make these workflows as not linked to any particular HPC container. So you want to be able to use different HPC containers, because you don't want to actually move to a HPC center and have to go through and change your entire workflow because you've written it for either a Singularity container or a Charlie Cloud container or a Shifter container or some other set of containers or set of workflows which require a particular container. So we actually want to keep that as generic as possible. So it gives you, it's a little bit more work at the start, but it gives you a lot, it saves you a lot more time when you're actually having to run on different HPC systems. And again, we want to use Docker files, because that gives you the recipe. So it's like, you don't have to remember what you did to install all the stuff to get things running. You can look at the recipe from the Docker file and say, okay, I'm not using OpenBlast, I need to use KubeBlast, or I need to use the ARM instance of these numbers. You can go in and change them to run it. And then obviously you need to test it as well before you sort of start running it on the production system. So hopefully the HPC centers have a test VM system with their architecture to test the stuff. There's another example of actually running the OpenHPC software stack inside a container using Podman. And again, there's examples of this on the GitHub. And this is used basically from a Docker image and runs that as well. That's also starting to take prevalence to the users. So some people actually say, okay, we'll install that. Obviously, HPC centers a lot more conservative in terms of what they'll install, but you know, maybe eventually they'll start using that technology. At the moment, you're probably not going to find a HPC center using that. The OpenHPC community, which is an open source software community, is open to all people to sort of join in terms of to get involved in it. But if you're a organization in academia or in a government lab, it's free to join. Obviously, you have to. There's a cost associated if you're with a company. And the contact would be for Neil Caden, which is the below. It's a good community, and it's the mailing lists are actively used, and people are using this software on real HPC systems. So the system at LRZ, the Supermarket NG system, is based on OpenHPC, only a small amount, but there are other systems in the top 50, and I think even in the top 20, which are entirely OpenHPC software systems. So we are seeing OpenHPC software and open source software being entirely used on HPC, on real world large scale HPC systems, which people can use. I guess now I'll open it up to questions.